your wigs, let the air out of your shoes, and prepare yourselves for a period of simulated exhilaration.
You're listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland.
There's something curious about this broadcast.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.
De nuevo, esta música divina.
There was heaven and there was earth.
Después de esta pieza, vamos a escuchar una comunicación simpática y cruel con Annie.
That's Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Every other Wednesday from 10 to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industries, Child Care for Construction, in partnership with Business Oregon, working to support those caring for children of journey workers in Oregon, even family and friends. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Can somebody go in the hallway and get Lisa for me, please? Can somebody go in the hallway and get Lisa for me? This is an older person who's being under arrest. I need my other staffer who's in the hallway by registration to come here, please. Can somebody get my staffer, please?
This is the hospital. Do you have a sign to this award for him? I am asking. I am asking. I did not touch you.
We told you to leave. I did not touch you.
Where? I asked you if you had a sign to this award for him. It is very simple. It is very simple. That man has constitutional rights. I did not touch you. It is a public space. I am not trespassing. I am asking you. Do you have a signed judicial warrant? I am asking. Do you have a signed judicial warrant for him? It is a person, sir. You are an agent. You are a federal agent.
We do not need a warrant for somebody.
You are a federal agent. I am an elected official, and I am asking. Do you have a signed judicial warrant?
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. The voice you heard is that of our guest, who was confronted, roughed up, handcuffed by ICE agents last month in Chicago. You also heard our guest speak to what was happening. And we want to follow up. We've done a number of shows as to what is happening with ICE in various cities around the country, and in particular in Chicago, which we have a lot of friends and family there and consider it almost a second home. Our guest is Jessie Fuentes, a queer Latina, grassroots organizer, educator, public policy advocate, and of course an alderman in the city of Chicago. Welcome to the show, Jessie, and glad to have you. We've had a number of Chicagoans on the show since ICE has been there, and you're the first alderman that we've had on. One would expect somebody in your position who holds office would not be treated the way that you are. I think as an organizer and somebody who comes from the grassroots as we do, we kind of get that. But I think a lot of people naively look and say, well, they would never do that to a mayor. They would never do that to an elected official. What did Jesse do wrong? Let's clear up some of the myth and find out exactly what is happening in your city with respect to ICE, and what's the dance they're doing with people like yourselves who do hold some sort of elected position?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. It's a privilege to be here with you today. Look, I think what we have to make clear on what's happening in the city of Chicago is that this is not immigration enforcement or even law enforcement that we're seeing in our city. This is punishment because the city of Chicago did not submit to the Donald Trump agenda. We are seeing racism, anti-Latino and anti-immigrant sort of operations running rampant on our streets, fascism and authoritarianism knocking on doors. We're watching racism turn into policy here in the city of Chicago. And so I was no different than a constituent who has gone to Broadview to advocate for individuals that they have wrongly detained. I was no different than an individual that was on the streets walking brown, Latino, and Spanish speaking. In the moment in which I was in the hospital, I wasn't impeding on an arrest. I wasn't aggressive with the ICE agents. I wasn't even trying to stop them from any detainment. I was simply asking a question if they had a signed judicial warrant for the individual that they had detained in that emergency room. And I was met with a lot of aggression, but that's a normal tactic for agents in the city of Chicago. Look, we had ICE agents murder Silverio Villegas in Franklin Park, just outside of Chicago. We had a woman on the southwest side shot by ICE agents, and they had put out a false narrative of what she had done. We had a teacher be pulled out of a daycare and detained in front of children and parents. This is Gestapo tactics to submit folks into fear. But Chicago is very upfront and honest about what we are going to do in this moment, and that is to fight for our neighbors.
Do we have any idea who those ICE agents are? I know here in California, there's a law they passed that says they can't wear masks, and there's a conflict because ICE agents are being told, wear your mask anyway, and so, you know, that's a legal battle that is going on. But we know a few things. Citizens who have unmasked ICE agents have been in violation of law. I'm not sure if that pertains to city officials. So do we have any idea, any inkling, in your position, have people been able to feed you some information and say, look, they're pulling from this pool of people? Are they fellow Chicagoans? Because we know that in many cities, they have aggressively been recruiting folks who may be down and out and need some money and want to get a $50,000 bonus or whatever they're offering. And we also know, in a very insidious way, to prevent police oversight, at least in L.A., they're doing that. We know that. They've been, and in New York now, they're like, hey, if you're an ICE, if you're a police officer, join ICE. You won't have to worry about civilian oversight committees, et cetera, et cetera. So what's happening in your city with respect to those questions?
Yeah, look, we have very similar laws in place. The mayor passed an executive order banning ICE agents from wearing masks. They're supposed to be able to identify themselves, show their badges. They're violating that law every single day here in the city of Chicago. These are individuals that are driving vehicles and switching out plates, right? These are individuals that are in plain clothing, masked up, and are utilizing their ability to not disclose their identity to run up on people and kidnap them on the streets. Look, we have no idea who these ICE agents are, but we do know that they come from everywhere. It's difficult not to sort of watch the type of incentives that Kristi Noem and the Donald Trump administration is putting out. $50,000 bonus, we'll take care of your debts, we'll make sure we pay your student loans. I mean, they're sort of pitching this as, you do this for a little while, we'll make sure you're debt-free when you walk out. And when individuals are living sort of difficult financial and economic lives, it becomes extremely appealing. But here's what we do know. We know that these individuals are not formally trained, right? Because we see it in the way they interact with our residents every single day. We know that they're not all law enforcement because of the way they don't know how to handle situations. We know in many instances, some of these individuals are also bounty hunters, deputized to carry out immigration enforcement. We know that if you go to a Homeland Security hiring event, that not only do you get vetted and get your stuff processed the same day, you walk out with a job offer. And so these are individuals that are not going through any formal training. These are individuals that are not being properly checked in terms of criminal records or any sort of historical data that will allow us to understand if these individuals are appropriate for the job. We are watching individuals physically harm, put people in hospitals, and in some instances, murder people on our streets. The same individual that handcuffed me at the hospital, he's seen on four other videos manhandling women, body slamming them to the ground, choking people up. That's not law enforcement. It's not even immigration enforcement. It is violence and assault against a Latino body.
Why haven't Chicago police, either under the direction of the mayor or I don't know what sort of pull you have as an alderman, not arrested these folks for being in violation of Chicago law? And let me just add this. You know, I know folks who have worked in law enforcement who have been arrested by other cops, stopped and detained, and having to deal with that. We know in LA there have been physical confrontations between police, like in Long Beach with ICE agents. So with a majority of your council, aldermen and a mayor that is against this, why haven't we seen the enforcement at the direction of the, why haven't we seen enforcement by Chicago police at the direction of the mayor?
Absolutely. Look, this is a question that I ask often, right? As an older person who has legislative authority over council, I've asked CPD, what are the parameters in which we are able to detain and arrest ICE agents who are picking up people without due process, without signed judicial warrants, and in many instances, without probable cause, assaulting and harming people? We always get this sort of runaround about what it means for law enforcement to try to hold law enforcement accountable in a mission of picking up individuals. But look, we have a consent decree here in the city of Chicago. We also have the Nava consent decree that judges have ruled that ICE is in violation of. And so we are working extremely hard, at least I am, with Coalition, to make a case that these individuals need to be held accountable. I also think that our state's attorney needs to be in a position to investigate and prosecute these individuals that are violating not just local and state law, right, but federal law. And we've seen that over and over again. These individuals are not just coming into the city and saying, well, we're not going to abide by the local laws of this city. They have over and over again violated people's constitutional rights, a constitution that we have all vowed to upkeep. And so I'm working hard to make sure that we can make the case. I've also passed an ordinance that or filed an ordinance that says that our COPA department will investigate and hold police accountable that cooperates with ICE. We are a welcoming city, and so no police officer should be cooperating with ICE or any department. And I want to make sure we have the accountability measures there to hold people accountable.
I still want to come back to this, Jesse. Jesse Fuentes, alderman out of Chicago, is our guest if you're tuning in. If I show up in Chicago, Davey D, and kick down the door of Jesse Fuentes without a warrant, if I assault Jesse Fuentes, if I intimidate Jesse Fuentes, I pretty much could expect to be arrested. Doesn't matter I'm a professor, doesn't matter that I'm a journalist, doesn't matter that I'm well known in my area, et cetera, et cetera. If my neighbor, you know, and I know this is a fact, you know, I there was an incident in Chicago several years ago where police officers from Oakland went out to Chicago and they found themselves damn near nearly arrested, right? So I've seen this, right? So we know that when push comes to shove, they can do what they need to do. Okay. The question is, you have a mayor, you have a governor, you have DAs, et cetera, et cetera. I'm wondering why, when somebody is in clear violation, they're not arrested. I would imagine if an ICE agent assaulted a Chicago cop, they would be arrested. I would imagine.
Well, they have in the city of Chicago.
Well, you know, so what's the deal with this then? why aren't they following these orders?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. That's exactly what we are demanding for, is accountability. And, you know, I have asked these questions of our superintendent, and a lot of the answers that we have received is, well, we got to be careful with how we put our local law enforcement in the middle of harm's way.
Who's saying that? Who's saying they got to be careful?
Well, the leadership of CPD, right, is saying they got to be careful with their officers and putting their officers in harm's way. And the question is, well, you know, our local law enforcement is required and mandated to protect citizens of Chicago. And we are being harmed by federal agents that don't identify themselves and are violating every law. And to the question that I ask all the time, is all law enforcement, no matter their badge or rank, should be held accountable when they break the law.
So nobody can force the police to carry out the law? That's where I'm confused. And that's why I gave those examples. So I gave a real life example of some years ago, there was a murder in Chicago, but it involved officer, I think a family member. So a cadre of officers from the Bay went to Chicago and, you know, they had all the, you know, badges, guns, the whole nine, was all up on your airwaves. And, you know, and at the end of the day, they had to follow Chicago's law. You see what I'm saying? So I'm just wondering, and this was Chicago PD that initiated that, like, you can't come in our city, whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop, you can't do this, that, and the third. So we know that they have done this. Why aren't they doing, I mean, I'm just, you know, when the mayor talks to them, is he directing them? Is the governor or whoever talking to them and they're saying, nah, we ain't going to do it? Are they in a position to say, well, you know, we'll fire somebody, we'll find somebody else who will?
Yeah. No, that's a fantastic question. Look, I think that the mayor and the governor has given directives about what it means to protect Chicago. I think that we have to continue to press our local law enforcement. Now, they talk about the mediations that they put in place, how they make sure that local law officers are mediating between law enforcement and CPD, in which they create barricades so that, you know, immigration enforcement can't have access to individuals during protests. And I think that's one part of the job, right? Obviously, protecting our citizens in the moment of protest is one. I think the thing that we need to get clarity on and make sure that we're pressing that CPD can hold these folks accountable is for the individuals that are being picked up without due process. Now, our local law enforcement has said, well, it's also extremely difficult because these individuals are masked and we can't identify them. And so it's hard to hold these folks accountable. And we know the tactics that ICE agents are using in our communities. They're coming in, they quickly sweep up and they're out, right? They're not sticking around long. They're tear gassing folks away from vehicles so they could take who they want to take, and then they take them off into Broadview. There have been several lawsuits by the city, by the state, and even by the county against Homeland Security, who is their employer, because in a lot of these instances, we can't identify these individuals.
Right. But at the very least, one would think that if somebody's wearing a mask, just to make sure that they are proper, that, you know, I've heard stories not pertaining to immigration, but just in general, where people have, we got a report that somebody is impersonating a police officer. Yeah. So we need to check this out. So we can't have police officers in Chicago say, you know, we need to make sure that you actually are the real deal. Are you actually a law enforcement? Let me see your ID. Let me see that. Which means that they have data. They know names, numbers, and they can say, okay, we checked it out. They actually are legit. They're not allowed to do that at all?
Yes, absolutely. They are allowed to do that. And in many instances where we have called CPD and CPD comes to the scene and ICE is still there, they have done that. Okay. To make sure that these individuals are agents indeed, and that's verified to the leadership of CPD. And we just had a hearing where we investigated just that point. Like, when you come in, are you making sure that these are not impersonators, right? That these are not people that are putting on a bulletproof vest and a mask and saying they're an ICE agent, but they're here just to create harm. And CPD has vocalized on the record that they in fact ensure that when they have contact with ICE, when they're called, that they verify that they are in fact ICE agents.
Jesse Fuentes, alderman out of Chicago, if you're just tuning in as our guest, as an elected official or in as a body, are you guys able to create and literally deputize a cadre of people? So let's say Jesse Fuentes has 20 people that are on your staff, and you come in tomorrow and say, we're going to put you through some training. You 10 are now deputized to go out and do the things that Chicago PD don't. You have the full weight of the state. You can go up and check and make sure, whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop and yada, yada, yada. If Chicago's dragging their feet, are you all able to create a rapid response force that does what they won't do?
Yes, absolutely. First and foremost, Chicago has a rapid response network of thousands of volunteers that are showing up every single morning at schools to make sure children and families are safe, that are responding to our ICER hotline with ICE sightings to make sure that we are not only documenting what is happening on these streets. And it has been the videos of rapid responders that have allowed us to build robust legal cases. Now, we have had a lot of conversations about what it means to deputize these thousands of individuals that are already carrying out the work. From our understanding, we can do that. The mayor's in support of that. So we're working on the legislative logistics of what that means. But look, our rapid response network here in the city of Chicago is extremely robust. We have people showing up every single day that are not just saving people from deportation or detainment, but we have been able to document the very constitutional violations that allow us to continue to win our Illinois Supreme Court cases against Homeland Security. And it's because people are showing up every single day.
So the next level is to give them the power to detain and arrest?
We don't know if they'll be able to detain and arrest. The idea is that we would deputize them so that they are protected by the Constitution of Chicago.
But right ICE now is violating the Constitution anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So, again, unless ICE is arresting Chicago police officers, you know, en masse and deporting them, I would imagine then that if I have the same power as a police officer and I show up with a uniform and that uniform says, you know, alderman cop or city hall cop or whatever, is a different type of ball game. But now you don't have this reticence, you know, of somebody going, well, you know, Jesse, I don't know. No, you know what? I got 20 people that will. This is our elite force. They will do the job. You fall back. They'll go do this. I mean, obviously, and I'm not being facetious in asking this, but we're seeing that if Homeland Security and ICE and Border Patrol are twisting and bending rules and laws and being quote-unquote imaginative in how they approach this, it seems like us on the other side who are victims to them should be just as imaginative, and, you know, people like yourself who are in, you know, policy making position would be the linchpin for that, ideally.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're working and utilizing every legislative lever that we can pull. And we also want to make sure that we're keeping people safe. Look, individuals with just phones in their hands have been tear gassed and hit with pepper bullets. We had an individual who was just trying to get in his car and get away, get murdered. And so it is also about the safety of our people, because these individuals have been given military grade weapons and use them whenever they feel is necessary. And so we work extremely hard when we train our rapid responders just how to respond and keep themselves safe, right? And so it's a level of, yes, we are protecting our neighbors and we're going to make sure that we're documenting everything that's happening so we can hold these folks accountable. But we also don't want to put people in moments of confrontation in which they can risk their lives. because we see that these agents have no qualms about taking people's lives here in the city of Chicago or in any city in which they're carrying out operations like the ones that we're seeing here in the city.
The story that the national story that many people received is that, yeah, we need to go to Chicago. We need boots on the ground. Chicago, there's like a cottage industry of folks who never been to Chicago, can barely speak English at this point, who do online documentaries that pay them lots of money about Chicago, Old Block, Humboldt Park, whatever neighborhoods, right? That's like Chicago's become the poster child for urban challenges, right? With that being said, ICE has been there for a couple of months now. Has crime gone down? Have we seen a reduction in any of the quote-unquote problems that have been highlighted around Chicago? Because that was the initial story, and that's the, you know, that was the thing that many folks were hanging their hat on. We send the National Guard and ICE to Chicago. It's going to be a safe city.
Yeah. Yeah, look, we this past summer had the safest summer in the city of Chicago since the 1960s.
Right. That before I showed up.
Before I showed up, right? We had homicides have record trends downward. We've had gun violence incidents, armed robbery, carjackings at the lowest that we've seen. Not just pre-pandemic, right? We're talking 50 years, 60 years of record low crime rates. That has nothing to do with ICE, but everything that we did here in the Chicago to make sure that we were investing in young people, that we were investing in ensuring that folks who were unhoused and street-based homeless had housing and shelter, to ensure that we had violence prevention gang mediators on our streets, making sure that we can create peace zones and that our families can be safe going to and from their homes. That was the work of the city and many organizations that have public safety and community safety as a priority, not just on platforms, but in their hearts. And we also got to be honest. Well, ICE is not coming in and taking people that have the worst on worst criminal records. Every data point shows that more than 70 to 75% of the individuals that are currently detained by ICE do not have any criminal record. In fact, in the city of Chicago, what we see people getting picked up for the most are traffic violations. Right. Who doesn't have a traffic violation?
Right. I want to make sure that we're clear of this, because the policy around ICE has created strange bedfellows. And I'll get into that. Some people have racial animosity, so they... let's get ICE. We'll get rid of these quote-unquote illegals and vice versa and all these other things, right? So, and this is actually just a follow-up to a larger conversation we had with other folks in Chicago, I think, when they raided that building, right? And one of the people, they're organizers in the city, and they live right across the street from the building. And they're like, yo, Dave, you know, the quote-unquote Venezuelan gang that was there, and they talk about they're brown like me, you know, said they ain't been there for months. So when they went in that building, I don't know who they got, but they was like... talking and breaking that whole thing down. So if we're talking about them coming in and supposedly clearing the streets of all these gangs, and you're saying, look, the data point is that they're getting, you know, Mrs. Lopez, who's selling food on the corner, you know, and homeboy who's trying to get a job at Home Depot, or the mother going to school. Well, where is gang X, gang B, gang C, all these gangs that are being shown in online documentaries and being amplified? As far as I could see, they're still, you know, they're still around. So what's the deal?
Yeah, look, I think it's important to understand that what we are seeing is individuals who have been a part of the fabric for our city for decades getting picked up. And we're not talking about individuals that just arrived from the recent Venezuelan migration. We're seeing Mexicans who have been here 40, 50 years being picked up, who own grocery stores and have owned their home for about 30. We're watching the tamalera who's been selling tamales for 20 years on that same corner, keeping our community tight-knit, who's being picked up, or the elote man we're not watching individuals that they sort of have utilized as a propaganda tool being picked up, right? When you look at Homeland Security footage, or, you know, even these mugshots that Donald Trump puts up on his social medias every now and again, those are not the individuals that we're seeing picked up in our communities. And that is because that is not the characterization of our people.
Right.
When you say, oh, what about, like, you know, I've had folks say, but what about the MS-13 members? I was like, well, who said that we were all MS-13 members, right? Like,
yeah.
It is sort of the stereotypical characteristics that are applied to Latinos as a people, that if you cross the border, you're a part of the cartel.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, let's be honest, we have had individuals by the millions come in who want to make sure that they're building a better life for their family, who have been contributors to our economy, who in many instances have been the fastest growing people in every sector of this country, from corporations down to landscapers and farmers, right? And so I think it's important to understand that what's happening is a dismantling of not just Chicago, but of Latinos across the sectors of the economy that we are saying we want to improve, right?
Right.
But consequently is going to erode our economy, particularly our local one here in the city.
Do we know where they're taking people? Are they shipping them off to El Salvador? Last time we had people on, they said they were taking them up to a city in Indiana. You know, what do you know?
Yeah, so we've seen both, right? In the early sort of operation of Midway Blitz, there was a group of individuals that were deported to El Salvador. We are most recently seeing folks getting taken to Indiana from our Broadview Processing Center. But also what we are seeing more and more every single day is that folks are being detained at the Broadview Center, right? And Broadview was not built to serve as a detention center, right? We have both women and men in the same bullpen with one toilet. We have individuals who are not eating proper food because there's not a cafeteria or a kitchen in Broadview. So people have been eating cookies and chips every single day. The climate and the sort of cleanliness is not up to par. We have had individuals that get sick inside of Broadview, but we have had individuals in Broadview who are there for days or weeks. Which is against what Broadview was built to handle. It's a small processing center, and we have hundreds of people that are being detained there.
How long do they stay, and what happens? Walk us through it. You go to Broadview, and then what happens?
So, look, there's many different layers of what happens, because so many people are being picked up without any due process or without any signed judicial warrant. We have had citizens picked up who are taken because they're Latino, they're taken to Broadview, and they're released within 6 to 32 hours, right? So mm-hmm. We see rounds of folks coming out that way. We have had individuals who are not citizens but have legal status. So, you know, whether they have a green card, a visa, asylum status, who come out between 36 to, you know, 54 hours, and they're there for a couple of days. And then we have individuals who are detained, who are waiting deportation, who are there for a couple of weeks before maybe they're transferred to Indiana.
Wow.
Or they're taken to El Salvador. So again, the conditions of our processing center, right? Look, everything that we're seeing in Broadview is a human rights violation. One,
right.
It should not be a detention center because it's merely a processing center. No one should be there more than 24 hours. But we are seeing people there for days, weeks at a time in inhumane conditions.
Jesse Fuentes, as we wrap up, one of the more insidious things that we saw was the deliberate playing of communities against one another. And let me paint the picture to be very specific, because this is something that is not unique to Chicago. We have it here in the Bay Area. We've come to find, you know, over the past couple of years, there's people that are in different cities. We definitely, with the ICE thing, seen this in DC, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll go back to that building where the kids were tied, and it was mostly Black folks that we saw in this instance. Almost immediately, There were videos that got put up online. There was a sister and there was another brother that was like, oh man, we need ICE. You know, I'm sick of all these, you know, folks coming in here and yada, yada, yada. And they ran this rhetoric. But luckily, you know, we had people that lived in the area. It's like, I've never seen these people. They don't live here. What are they talking about? Then we looked at the videos in D.C. And you have people that are like, you know, I've been in Southeast D.C. and Anacostia, and we need ICE. And then you turn around even here in Oakland. You'll have people get online, and they're doom loopers. They're backed by somebody. And they usually... You know, they might get a brown face in some cases in L.A. They might get a black face, and they will use their phenotype and then their purported status of where they live. So in this case, this sister was online talking about, I live here, you know, in the Inglewood District or whatever it was that building was at, and made it sound like she was legit. And was like, we need ICE, and now our neighborhood is gang-free, and all these illegals need to go. Until somebody's like, I live right across the street, she's not from there. But not everybody has that privileged platform and a narrative, you know, I mean, a way to counter the narrative. From what you're seeing, has that been problematic on the ground? People popping up, being popped up, speaking on behalf of the city, making it, you know, causing confusion, racial division, the whole nine. How have you all been able to navigate that, handle that? Has it brought people together, or has it been a very divisive tactic? And what should we that are listening in other cities learn from those challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we have them here in the city of Chicago, and that started when Governor Abbott decided to charter buses and send new arrivals to the city, right? Mm-hmm. Let's be clear, that was all a political tactic so that the sort of racial divisions can begin at the arrival of these individuals to our city. We have a small cohort of folks that call themselves Chicago Flips Red, right?
Yeah.
A black cohort of individuals that sort of work really hard to pit black folks against Latinos and create sort of narratives around what's happening that's not rooted in reality or facts and distort the facts of the moment that we're in. And I think what we've seen is there are individuals who live in these communities who have either volunteered at the shelters where new arrivals are at, or who know Latinos who have been here for decades, who have been contributors, who are good friends of theirs. We have seen such a beautiful display of solidarity in the city of Chicago. I mean, we have people across every single race showing up for our community. And I think when we have individuals who are doing that and who take the time to document, it really helps sort of dismantle this rhetoric that we're watching the right wing put together around, you know, Latinos taking black jobs or Latinos taking over our black communities. Look, we have to understand that this is not about Latinos taking anything. This is about peeling off one set of people at a time. Today is immigrants, tomorrow is someone else, right? And I think it is going to be our ability to stand in solidarity and not to allow the sort of rhetoric of division take over our community. We are better suited in fighting together than we are apart. The reality is we're not each other's enemies. We live in a country, unfortunately, that is still rooted in white supremacy and that seeks to uphold white nationalism in this country. And they will do anything to dismantle our collective strength and our collective movement. They can't win if we are fighting together, but they can if we're divided. And so everything that we are seeing is a political ploy to make sure that we can't strengthen our communities together. And we have to be extremely diligent and sort of critical in this moment to not fall for all the things that we are hearing and seeing. Look, when that Black Hawk helicopter landed on the building in South Shore, we had federal agents, both Border Patrol and ICE, rappelling off of the roof of that building and into people's homes. There was a production team right behind them.
Yeah.
Three video cameras, sound producers. This wasn't about making sure that the families in South Shore were safe. This was about creating another propaganda opportunity to feed people.
Right.
So that we can continue to make people angry, so that we can continue to sow division. But the only people who know what truly happened in that moment were the people that lived in that community and saw the harm that was caused by those agents.
Right.
That's why it's important that when we're seeing things and we're in our community, it's why I'm so grateful to the thousands of rapid responders that choose to meet agents with military grade weapons, with cell phones in their hands and whistles on their chest. Because they are documenting that we are not the violent ones, that we are not the problem in this country, that we are not the thing to be solved. The thing that has to be solved is our obsession with war, our hate for black and brown people, our need to uphold white nationalism, to make sure that the power of a few is kept intact while we keep people starving. And it's not just the operation of Midway Blitz. We see it in the cuts to Medicaid, in the withholding of SNAP so people could get food, in not allowing cities like Chicago to get infrastructure dollars so we can improve transportation. This is about how do we keep people in survival mode so they're not strong enough to fight us. That's what we're seeing. We see it right here in the city of Chicago.
Real talk, and I'm glad that you were able to demystify the narrative. You know, because along with that production team, I would argue, along came the actors and actresses to stand in front of the building with a black or brown face and say, "We need ICE. I'm from, you know," and, you know, because it was almost on cue. And I tell people, if you're not following these stories, then you can fall to it. But then it's like, wait a second, they just did that in D.C. They literally did. You know, they had somebody driving around a car. "I'm from Southeast. We need ICE." And then all of a sudden, here in Oakland, they're popping up online and being amplified by social media. You know, probably what you're doing is not going to be amplified by Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk or whoever controls those algorithms. But those folks certainly showed up on my timeline. I'm like, I don't even follow you. How are you here? You know, why are you on my feed? But it's going to be up to us to be intentional about shining a light, calling it out, and getting the good word that you provided, that this unity in our streets and people are about the life of bringing people together. With that being said, thank you for joining our show. Anything, marching orders you want to give our listeners, either here in the Bay or around the country that's listening, how can they help? Is there a place to tap in, et cetera, et cetera?
Look, absolutely. Here in the city of Chicago, I think we learned a lot in the midst of Midway Blitz here in the city and what it meant to build rapid response teams, what it meant to be in lock and step with nonprofit organizations as government to really make sure that we're showing out. You know, for folks in Portland and in the Bay Area, in New York, right, in North Carolina, we're seeing it in Charlotte today. It is about how do we ensure that there is a real inside and outside operation to protect our people. Government has a role to play. Rapid responders have a role to play. Nonprofits have a role to play. And this is not a fight for one entity. It's all of our fight to make sure that our neighbors are safe. I think we obviously have a lot of healing to do from the trauma that folks had to face from Midway Blitz and the ongoing sort of violence that we're seeing against ICE agents. You know, Border Patrol left, but ICE is still here. And I think we have to stay extremely diligent in this morning. And I can't stress this enough. That's why I'm so grateful to our rapid responders. Documenting what we are seeing in this moment will be a reckoning for this country. It'll be a compilation of those videos that tell the moment that we are in. It is going to be our ability to show who stood on the right side of history when our children are asking the question, "What did you do? What did you do in this moment?" We will be able to prove who stood up, who showed up, and who protected our children. And so if you do nothing else, you document what's happening in your city.
Yeah. Screenshot and save. That's, you know, like those individuals that popped up. I was like, let me screenshot and save this. You know, because now you don't see them on the algorithms no more, right? They kind of disappeared, but no, we remember you, you know. You were talking about Flip Chicago Red, or you were up here talking about we need ICE in Oakland. Nope, we will remember, and that's important. Jesse Fuentes, out of Chicago, thank you for joining us this afternoon. We appreciate what you're doing, and we will stay in touch. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. Ralph and out. Peace.
Due to unprecedented civil unrest, all forms of protest are now classified as acts of terrorism. This is not a test. This is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe, grab a tyrant by the toe. Flashes, puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Never bow to in a toupee, yelling free speech, but controlling what the news say. The Lorax called, it's time to find a new shade. RuPaul's never seen a beat that bad on Drag Race. Ain't it obvious the person in the office is a racist? Brad came in the mail, but he opposes immigration. And someone's Abuelita, not a foreign armed invasion. That would be the mass man reading graduation ceremonies. Unmarked vans snatching people out the street. Broken Amendments 5, 10, and 14, at least. But please tell me again, oh, this is still democracy?
Repeat, this is not a test.
Coward, traitor, liar, foe. Grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show. Line them up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar, foe. Grab a tyrant by the toe. Puppet show, line them up like dominoes. Please explain it to me. The man in charge of the economy's got 6 bankruptcies. Huh? Asking ChatGPT to define GDP, defund an education when half the country can't read. Well, now it's clicking for me. You need the people asleep, and knowledge is the greatest threat to propaganda machines. Remember, books don't burn, they just quietly vanish. So don't wait till it's too late to panic. Iceberg, Titanic, threat level orange. Don't you see that they're ignoring our rights? It's fascism wrapped in red, blue, and white. Coward, traitor, liar, foe. Grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show. Line them up like dominoes. Coward, traitor, liar, foe. Grab a tyrant by the toe. Fascist puppet show. Line them up like
dominoes.
It's a threat level orange.
Warning.
It's a threat level orange.
Warning.
It's a threat level orange. It's a threat level orange.
The American dream's like any other. Open your eyes and it's gone.
Hard knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop, EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone, hard knock. Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Need and Davey D.
Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah.
Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice pick they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Hating that they made they beats trying to eat till they're ready from the steel gray beats. They bleed. I'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Saying peace to the lovers I made with a please. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Here you go, Eating David G.
Real Talk Radio.
You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.
Wars of the freedom of speech. The U.S. gets kudos all around the world for its heralded First Amendment rights, including the right to freedom of speech. Does the record suggest that? Let's examine it. Years ago, during the last month of the 60s, about 4 young brothers, including myself, went to the Spectrum, a huge arena in South Philly, to protest the appearance of Governor George Wallace of Alabama, who was there to give a speech in support of his presidential campaign. We viewed Wallace, an arch segregationist, as a racist, and we wanted our voices to be heard. We shouted black power in the arena and got rushed out by security guards and police. When we left, we were all beaten by plainclothes cops. All of us have scars on our bodies from injuries we sustained that night. How free was free speech if we paid for it in blood, scars, and injuries? Fast forward to today, to the fall of 2024, when students were awakened to the genocidal carnage against Gazans in Palestine for speaking and speaking out against Zionist violence against Palestinians. Many of these students were suspended or expelled from their schools. Some students had their job offers withdrawn. How free is free speech when students are expelled or their life careers are threatened? And let's look at this. Today, there were thousands and thousands of Latinos and Hispanics all across the country who were terrified of speaking their language, Spanish, in the streets of the United States for fear of being thrown into a car by men with masks and then thrown into a cell and then exported out of the country to God knows where. Does that sound like free speech to you? Free speech is a bourgeois promise that ignores more than it protects. And bourgeois promises make it real. Protect free speech with love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
In the realm of the airwaves, where the truth does spin,
Hard Knock Radio takes the mic. Let the dialogue begin.
From the heart of the culture, where the beats do sway,
hip hop, pop, politics, and culture
rule the day.
Rock it on your radio.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio.
Speaking truth to power.
Hard Knock, rock it on your radio. Hard Knock, rocking on your radio.
Speaking truth to power.
Hard Knock, rocking on your radio. Hard Knock, rocking on your radio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I heard that men never choose. The one that they really love is the one that they lose. She ends up being the one they dream about. In a suburban house with a woman he settled for, she was better for him, I guess. God bless, but it couldn't be me. She's got her face beat, and she's always home, and she put to sleep every dream of her own. And she lets you go cheap, long as you come home. Searching the streets for someone. Never learn, change everything about myself, hoping I get a turn, just to be the one he daydream about. In a two-bedroom house with a white
hey, ho, 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 Hard Knock Radio. East, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous. Speaking to the thugs, one love. We know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo. It's It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415's bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, rah, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, repping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, repping to the hard side.
listening to KBOO Portland.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every other Wednesday at 10 p.m.